Well, very welcome tonight. We have the Southern Eastern and Social Care Trust, and we have the Southern Health and Social Care Trust.
Do you care to maybe introduce yourself first, and then we'll get the elected members and ourselves to do something similar?
Thank you. Thank you for the invitation. My name is Dawn Bradley. I'm the Interim Director of Adult Services, which is Disability and Mental Health, and I'm from the South Eastern Trust.
Good evening. My name is Naomi Dunbar, and I'm the Assistant Director for Strategic and Capital Development with the South Eastern Trust.
Hello, my name is Gerard Rocks. I'm Assistant Director for Promoting Wellbeing with the Southern Trust.
Marie Ward, Chief Executive.
Tony Casey, Chair of Council, Newry City Councillor.
Tara Alves, Deputy Chair of Council and Rowallan Councillor.
Backbenchers. Director stuck way over here in the background. Oh, I thought you spoke. My humble apologies. That's me, Red Van again. Go ahead. Are there any other apologies that aren't necessarily recorded?
There's a couple of little rounds.
Our arrivals have just... There he is, our boys is our sitting down, just for the benefit of the tape.
Councillor Michael Savage.
Lovely. Any declarations of interest?
None, sir.
No?
None, sir.
No? Thank you. On to item number 3, that's a response from the South Eastern Health and Social Care Trust. Can we have...
You
don't mind?
Thank you very much, Chair. We have sent a formal response to Council. I suspect colleagues have the response in front of them to the 4 questions that were asked from Council. We're happy to elaborate on those if required. Given that we have the opportunity, we'd also like to cover a couple of areas that may be of interest to Council in terms of recent developments. And if there are any other questions as well, we're happy to take those.
Do the whole movie first, sir? Okay.
Okay, if there are no questions then on the 4 questions, we're happy to proceed with the video. I'll just ask Naomi just to introduce this particular issue that we want to share with yourselves.
Thank you, Dawn, and thank you, Chair. We just thought it would be very useful in terms of the community planning with the Council, just to talk to you about a new service that we have in the Down area. So this is a service aimed at enhancing the services available to people at primary care level, and it's called multidisciplinary teams. So I just want to play the video first, and then I'll explain more about this service, but I think the video would give you a good background to it. So if you could pick that.
The way in which we deliver care in general practice in Northern Ireland is being transformed. We are expanding the practice team with the addition of a wider range of healthcare professionals that you will have access to. We are also investing significantly in the buildings that house GP practices to ensure we have the space for the new staff. The expanded practice multidisciplinary team will help provide more of a focus on earlier interventions to maintain your physical health, your mental health, and your social well-being.
You can now make an appointment to see a physiotherapist, a mental health practitioner, or a social worker. We want you to make an appointment with a professional who can most effectively assess your needs and address the issues that you're facing at the earliest opportunity.
As a first contact physiotherapist, we are experts in assessing, diagnosing, and managing any muscular, spinal, or joint issues that you may have. During a consultation, we are able to order a variety of tests and request x-rays as appropriate. As part of your management, we can prescribe medication, offer joint injections, and refer you to another service if required.
As a social worker, I will work with you to identify and address any issues which may affect your physical or mental health and general well-being. Together, we can discuss any problems you have, explore what is important to you, and provide you with advice, help, and support. I will also work with other people and groups in your local community to help you access appropriate services.
Part of the wider multidisciplinary team, mental health practitioners will promote positive mental health and well-being through early intervention, prevention and management of mental illness and supporting good mental health.
These new roles will work with GPs, nurses, practice-based pharmacists and the rest of the existing practice team. They will help you to maintain your health and well-being through prevention, early intervention, faster diagnosis, self-management, and timely access to appropriate services. We are also increasing the number of district nurses and health visitors within multidisciplinary teams.
Increased investment in district nursing means that I can support more people in the community, providing vital health care interventions and preventing unnecessary admissions to hospital.
As a health visitor, I am passionate about promoting healthy lifestyles and preventing illness. I work with families to give preschool-age children the best possible start in life.
And of course, your local GP will continue to be available to assess, manage, diagnose and treat illness. We will work together as a team to ensure that you receive the best and most appropriate health and social care services.
Multidisciplinary teams represent a huge innovation in the way we deliver primary care services in the community, and they're also a key part of our overall program of transforming health services in Northern Ireland. We've already got them in the federations in Down and Derry and West Belfast, and we're really pleased to announce that we're bringing them out into the federations of Lurien District and Causeway. Now, this change isn't going to happen overnight. Transformation like this never can. But we're committed to keep going until we've got MDTs rolled out across the whole of North Ireland.
Thank you. So I think this gives you a flavour of what multidisciplinary teams are and what we aim for them to be in Northern Ireland. In terms of, as the video articulated, this is to help with more collaborative working, to have a wider range of professionals working in primary care, and that is with alongside the GP and the district nurses and the health visitors. That includes mental health practice-based mental health personnel and also social work professionals. This is in line with delivering together vision for health and social care, and it will be delivered in partnership with our GP federations. There are two early implementer sites that were identified in Northern Ireland, one in the northwest, which was seen as being an urban project, and one in Downpatrick, which was seen as being mainly a rural area. The Down area has 13 GP practices, that are involved in this project, along with the trust community services and the community and voluntary sectors. It has been broken down by four clusters across the Down area. So we firstly have Newcastle and three GP practices there. We have the Downpatrick and Ardglass cluster, which has five GP practices. Then we have Banla Hinch and Clock with two practices, and Clossgar, Killalea and St Faith's three practices are involved. They all, each cluster has about 20,000 patients each, which brings us to the population of the area of about 75,000. We've seen significant expansion or investment in services, and the expansion of district and health visiting, district nursing and health visiting, across the four clusters. Additional recruitment has been undertaken, and they are now working with the GPs in a new way of delivering services. We also have what was talked about in the video, which was practice-based mental health professionals, and maybe Dawn, you could talk to that a little bit.
Yeah, the mental health professionals will be slightly different from the other professionals that Naomi has outlined, in that the mental health professionals will be directly employed by the GP Federation. So within the Down District, there have now been 7.5 professionals from mental health who have been recruited onto the Federation to cover the Down area. And it's our anticipation that those professionals will work with GPs to really address a lot of the mild to moderate mental health difficulties that people experience, people with distress, low levels of depression, etc. And those mental health professionals will work with the new social workers who are attached to multidisciplinary teams, nurses, etc., both to work at an individual level with people who present a GP practice with low-level mental health issues, and to stimulate community development with some of the voluntary and third sector providers that would already be in this area.
Okay, so the other three service developments in this area are, firstly, you heard it on the video, the first contact physio. So the first contact physio in primary care will do an assessment. He may also do treatments such as joint injections, or they may refer on. Patients have access to a 20-minute assessment and expert advice on self-management. To date, from February to June of this year, there were just under 5,000 appointments booked. A lot of them was self-management with the patient, teaching them how to self-manage their condition, and a number of them were injections, and a small proportion were onward referral to imaging for diagnostics or maybe for further treatment. The next one is a practice-based social worker, and in terms of this development, it is to focus on the social detriments of health and wellbeing and to tackle the health and social care inequalities by resilience and resource building with individuals, groups and communities. So, for example, in the area of substance abuse or cognitive behavioural therapies. Also, this role is really good. For example, if you have a neighbourhood district nurse who is out with a patient and they notice that the patient maybe is lonely, they can come back and speak to the social worker, who will then get in contact with the community or voluntary sector and solve that problem. So in April to June of this year, we had 384 patients seen, 193 received focused intervention, 121 were referred on to the appropriate service, and 99% of patients turned up for their appointment. And the average number of days from the referral to the intervention was an average of 2 days. Another project that's ongoing, I mean, we work with the council in terms of health development, and one really good project that's going on at the moment is called the Wilderness Project, which is a programme for children and young people and their families. The children are out of school due to maybe mental health issues and require significant support from primary care. So this approach is very new. It's a concept idea where there's 8 children at the moment from the Down area, and we're working with YMCA and the CAM service, and we're using the natural resource that we have of the lovely Down area to work with the children, and the feedback has been extremely positive to date, and there is the potential to run this with the wider multidisciplinary team, with the social workers and with the mental health staff also. So where we are with this project is we've put all of the infrastructure into place. The next steps are to consider further transformation, to test new concepts in primary care, to explore further opportunities with councils, and, you know, working with the councils, leisure services, to encourage people to take more responsibility for their own health, to see if there are other services maybe that can come out of secondary care and into primary care, and to maybe work with the likes of the independent sector, for example, nursing homes, where a patient maybe has dementia, and that we give the nurses within the independent sector some training, which then may avoid repeat attendances to the GP or to our A&E departments. So in terms of what we need to do next, we need to evaluate the early implementer programmes, and then the Trust hopes to roll this out across all of our sectors. So that's really it, that in terms of multidisciplinary teams. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Naomi and Dawn. Active members, any questions or observations on what you've heard so far on the response? Yes, William?
Chair, thank you very much. I want to thank you for your presentation, and I actually think the multidisciplinary team's great idea. I had the privilege of meeting with them in Kilray surgery, so it did, and I'm very excited about the work they're going to be doing. But one question I would like answered is the funding for it in relation to funding this. Is this just going to be something we get up running, it's a great success, and then all of a sudden we find that there's no money left in the pot? Will this be continuously funded over a number of years? Because, like a lot of things, you get a lot of things that's very successful, and then all of a sudden the funding dries up for some reason or another and that there. And I think, you know, we need to know whether, you know, this is going to be long-term, or it's something that's going to be pulled a couple of years down the line and that. So it's all about funding, you know, and it's something I've seen and I've spoke to them, and I'm very, very confident that this will be a great success in the community. So it will, but it's all down to funding.
Yes, I agree. The funding for this comes from the confidence and supply monies. So there has been a transformation fund for health and social care in Northern Ireland. And while, you know, it is for the Department of Health to confirm whether or not the funding is available, the fact that two pilots have commenced in the Down District and in the Boyle District, but already they've extended to West, and as you can see from the video, they're being extended to Newry and other areas as well, I think is indicative of the direction of travel of the Department of Health. So although we as Trust are not in a position to confirm the recurrent funding, it certainly would be our expectation that this is part of the NGOA transformation of the Northern Ireland Health Service. So we would expect this to continue.
Okay, now, William. We'll get you back on that one. Any other questions or observations? Go ahead.
Thanks very much, Chair. First of all, I'd like to thank you very much for your presentation. And I know over the past lot of years that the Trust has put a lot of emphasis and efforts into healthy lifestyles. But, you know, some of the problems that I experienced is with constituents who may have health issues or problems, and they're being encouraged to go and to take part in the regular council and facilities so they keep fit and think fit. But the doctor will not send a letter, you know, to allow the, because the council, we have stringent policies in place to ensure, you know, if people have heart problems or other things, you know, like 100 doctors are telling you to be healthy, and yet when they ask for a letter to give to the council, doctors are a bit reluctant, you know. I'm just wondering, is there anything that the Trust or anything to put in place guidelines for GP surgeries to, you know, to encourage their patients to, as well as that, and have the lifestyle to encourage it. But I understand there could be some risk to some of a doctor saying a letter and the person died, you know, say, just the thing is, you know, I think it's just facts, you know, the whole thing is just more or less, we need guidelines to, for doctors and for constituents.
Sure, if I may respond to that, or at least try to. There are a number of schemes through which people can access physical activity opportunities in councils, one of which I think is one of the ones that you're referring to is known as the Physical Activity Referral Scheme, which is a GP referral scheme, and it's funded by the Public Health Agency. And there would be a number of specific criteria that people would be required to meet in order to be referred by their GP into that programme. But it is not the only opportunity, and indeed both South Eastern Trust and Stuller Trust are working in partnership with the council here, and we have each put in a little bit of funding to try to put a bit of resource into the council to expand the range of opportunities that are available for people to access to improve their physical activity. And indeed to create a pathway through council that enables people to do that, which isn't necessarily dependent on a referral from their GP. I mean, we know the chief medical officer, the chief medical officer in England had previously described physical activity as, I'm paraphrasing here, but a much underused weapon in the arsenal against clinical diseases. In other words, we know that if people are physically active, it has significant benefits not only for their physical well-being but also for their mental and emotional and social well-being as well. And mindful of that, we are working in partnership to try to ensure that people don't feel that they are missing out, and that they're aware of the access opportunities that already exist.
Thanks. Would it possible could you send, if I give you a card, could you send some more information and I can give it to look at that?
More than happy to.
Thank you very much.
And just to link that back to the multidisciplinary team, we're anticipating this joint initiative between council, ourselves, and the Southern Trust, that the multidisciplinary team mental health manager will be able to make referrals directly from the multidisciplinary team to the physical activity coordinator.
Thank you very much.
Excellent. Any other elected members there? Jonathan, you weren't in, you hadn't arrived when we were making the earlier introductions. Would you just mind introducing yourself just to the panel, please, if you don't mind?
Hello, I'm Catherine Owen, councillor, William's wingman. or woman. First of all, though, I do have a question, but I do need to declare an interest. I'm sure you've maybe seen the scrubs sitting back here. I'm actually doing a PhD with Southern Trust in Craigavon. So as far as I'll keep out of that. But I do have a question, though, as far as the community multidisciplinary team, how are you finding, is that working well as far as keeping people out of hospitals? It's a fantastic idea, and I know people really want to stay in their own homes whenever they're well, or whenever they're unwell, and particularly the elderly and those with dementia. How are we finding? Is it helping with our figures?
Yes. Sorry. Excuse me. Yes, it is. We're finding that many of these instances with the multidisciplinary teams, it's actually staving off any onward referral because the person is being showed how to self-manage, or they're actually getting the treatment on the day and then they don't need to come back to the service, either the secondary care service, or in fact they may not have repeat visits then to their GP. So yes, definitely there's a difference being seen.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I guess it's very early days yet from the mental health perspective, but one of the key principles is very often GPs refer into mental health services because of the lack of service that there is available at a primary care level. It is hoped that this will reduce the number of referrals into mental health so that people can be treated more quickly, more locally, and more effectively as a result of the development of these earlier intervention services.
Okay. Sorry, yes, go ahead.
Thank you. I would just like to ask a question about, have you any update on the regional trauma unit or network? Because I know that the last time we spoke that you were in the position to recruit two staff members locally. So I'm sort of wanting to see, is that still the case? Have you increased that? And if the local forum that worked between the victims and Survivor Service, the South Eastern Trust and the local GP, if that's still going. And then on a second question, I'm sort of wanting to hear what the Trust has done to progress finding external care staff, care agency staff, to try and bring people home from homes and from the local hospitals, because there's a lack of care packages, and there's a couple of cases where I'm dealing with where the patient has been offered direct payments as opposed to actually getting a care package in place, just to see if that's what's been done there to try and sort it out, basically.
Okay, with regard to the first point, Mr. Lewis, since we last met, I think about a year ago, the trauma team has been extended, and we do expect that that team will continue to grow, assuming that there will be additional investment as agreed through the medical arrangement, that will continue to flow. So we are appointing additional staff as part of the whole trauma network arrangement. With regard to the victims' organisations, I'm not as close to it as I was because of my changed role, but I do know that the regional forum did include victims' representatives on that. I have no doubt that there will be always issues in relation to the totality of that engagement, but as far as I'm concerned, the original proposal is rolling out and additional staff have been recruited. I guess with regard to your second point, you mentioned a couple of things there. I think one of the original questions that was asked by council was in relation to the demand for the residential sector and how that appeared to drop off. And the reality is that there has been a tremendous growth in the request for domiciliary care, which is entirely the strategic direction that we wanted to go in, so much so that we find that the demand for residential care that there once was, because of the success of domiciliary care, there are more and more people choosing to remain at home. So there's not the demand for residential sector that there was before. There certainly is for nursing residential accommodation. What I can say is that there are general recruitment difficulties throughout Northern Ireland, and domiciliary care being one of that. But I have, I'm very aware from a colleague that I have met recently in Older People's Services, that we have appointed 70 additional staff to specifically deliver on domiciliary care, and we expect those to be coming into the system. The level of domiciliary care, both delivered by the independent sector and by the statutory sector, has and will continue to grow.
And Dawn, if I could just add to that as well, in terms of the down sector, I think when Roisin was last here, she advised about the rollout of the enhanced care at home service, which is where patients can be treated, get their nursing care at home. And that's been a real success for the people of Down, and you know, because people have told us they want to be treated for at home, they don't want to be in residential care anymore. So I think that's just also the add-on to what Dawn said. Thank you.
Yeah, could I ask maybe Gerard just to enlighten us a bit about, you talked about the rollout of the initiative in the Southern Trust. Can you give us any idea at this stage how that will take place?
Well, some of the Southern Trust next.
Oh, no, I thought that I thought that you're taking a question on the whole general thing. And
well, no. Maybe on the force to do with our questions and response, and then we could
bring up. Yes. Yeah, that would have just the default.
Go ahead, I can give it.
Well, whoever, anybody wants that.
Yeah, it's just on the, we talked about rolling out the Southern Trust, just how that'll happen. And
sorry, this is in reference to multidisciplinary teams?
Yeah, that's the one.
Well, as Dawn and Naomi have said, more recently, after the pilot sites that happened in the Northwest and Downpatrick, there's been a further rollout, a second phase, if you like, and Nurien District is part of that second phase. It's fair to say, and I don't have a lot of the detail because I'm not that close to it, that we are a little bit further behind, and that's just by nature or by virtue of the fact that the funding tranches were issued in a phased approach. The Trust, Southern Trust, has recently appointed a project lead for the rollout of the multidisciplinary teams across the Nurien District area in partnership with that federation. Naomi has very clearly set out the roles and responsibilities of the multidisciplinary teams in terms of the mental health practitioner role, the first contact physio, the social worker, etc. So, I mean, it will be a similar setup within the Nurien District Federation, but really early days at this stage with reference to recruitment of posts and that process hasn't yet been completed. I suppose we anticipate that we'll see some progress in relation to that in the coming weeks.
Yeah, I just ended here where it has been levered out through, you know, and I know some of it's obviously at home, etc., but, you know, where's the nucleus of it? Of the staffing arrangements, etc.
So, what I've given you there is as much really as I'm able to say at this stage.
Okay.
My understanding is that there are 14 practices that will be the rollout in the first instance within the Nurien District Federation. But in terms of where the processes are at with respect to recruitment, it's still early stages.
Mm. Could I just comment, just to remind you, that you mean somebody, yes, you have a little bit of role in the practice, and that maybe can impact on them in terms of space, because I understand that some practices, well, we all welcome the devolution down of the services, that from the state point of view, is hard, actually, the simple thing is, like, space is very hard for them to cope with all these services come in and find space for people to work actually in. You know, so that's what I really was sort of trying to get to the bottom of.
Right. Yeah, and that is, you know, a reality. So, I mean, just for one staff group alone, and this is a smaller staff group, mental health staff, that's an additional 7.5 staff. So you're quite right to ask where all these people go.
Yeah.
There is a financial enhancement to those GP practices that need to extend their premises to be able to bring in this extended multidisciplinary team.
Mm.
So while not all of those accommodation or spaces are immediately available, there may be temporary arrangements entered into where the trust supports the GP in terms of the staff that are actually working around the practice. But there is also an intention that some of the GP surgeries will have to expand physically, and money has already been made available to make that happen in some instances within the town sector.
Okay, thank you.
Arl, is yours the South Eastern Trust or the Southern Trust?
The Southern Trust.
Oh, we'll finish with the South Eastern and then we'll...
But it's on the same subject, the mental health. Is that going to be addressed in the Southern Trust as well, or do we address it now?
Yeah, as Naomi identified earlier, the initial pilots were one urban, one rural, the Down being the rural one. There are already plans in place, and recruitment has started for the mental health staff in Uri. And I'm aware personally of a number of appointments that there have been already made to the Newry multidisciplinary team for mental health staff.
Yes, could I just ask Chairman again, in relation, irrespective of Southern or South East, wherever, you know, on the...
That's me too, though.
I'm looking at it from a point of view of someone who is literally traumatised, stressed out, mental health issue, how they're dealt with when they do approach. Should it be Downpatrick, Newry? Should it even be in Kilkeel, more rural again? You know, I think these people who are affected in that way, need to have, to be able to be addressed with the situation with some sort of help immediately. They don't have time to go and chat and talk. Well, doctor's not in, come back tomorrow, come back next week. So there need to be something different about frontline services to deal with someone who's traumatized. This is from knowing someone experienced before, and it's not nice to see and watch someone in that distressed state. And I think there should be someone there, and I know you can't have them everywhere, but particularly at a hospital level, I'd imagine there should be someone on the front line who can deal and someone can get addressed situation immediately. Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, I'm happy to answer that one. I think this is the beauty of this service. I mean, there is a huge burden on GP practices. The fact that there are a whole range of professionals now based around that GP practice means that people should be seen quicker. I think for the type of individual that you're discussing, who is in mental distress, the very fact that there will be a senior mental health professional based in each GP practice when this fully rolls out means that that person will have a much quicker assessment than they otherwise would have done. The advantage to us within secondary mental health care is that is an experienced mental health professional, most likely who's already worked within our system, and they will know what should be escalated up into secondary mental health services or what they can manage themselves around primary care. They are very senior posts that are working within mental health practice. So if I could just give you a real example of that. If someone presents to a GP practice in Sheffield and the GP feels that person requires a mental health intervention but isn't sure, the GP makes the referral to mental health service. We're required to see people within 9 weeks. That person may come to see us. They certainly may be in distress, but they may not require a secondary mental health service. We tend to refer them back to GP with voluntary sector input. The whole idea of a multidisciplinary team, so that in future, that person won't come and have to wait. They will be seen by the mental health professional when they present at the practice. But I think the other advantage of this is that mental health professional, along with the social worker, along with the nurse, along with the third sector, the community and voluntary sector, and we are already heavily engaged with Nicholas McCrickard, who I know presented to you very recently, in developing other alternatives at an earlier intervention level for the people you describe.
All right, Harold. Michael, I want to finish with the Southern Institute. I want to add number four. This is a question and response from the Southern Health and Social Care Trust. You have the copies in your papers, I would imagine. Do you have any issues with the responses? I have a gentleman here to bat the balls.
Thank you, Chair. Just as Dawn and Naomi have done before me, I'd just like to draw people's attention to the responses, the written responses that have been previously shared to the four questions that were asked of the Southern Trust. So if there are any questions, I'm happy to take any questions or comments back to the Trust.
Yeah, thanks, Chair. There's just a couple of things, I suppose. Some of it has been answered in the response, and it's just maybe if you can't answer them tonight, even if we can get a wee bit more information. Just in terms of the question around the understaffing, and I know that they've said that there's a plan in place about recruiting consultants. I know in Daisy Hill, there's, you know, we've been able to say that there's possibly upwards of three consultants leaving or in the process of leaving. Do the trust have the carried out any exit interviews to kind of find out why? I suppose really what we're saying is over the last number of years we've seen, you know, nearly crisis point in some of our departments, BD department and that, and we want to ensure that the trusts are preparing for this and trying to attract consultants and middle grade doctors to come and want to work in Daisy Hill and to stay in Daisy Hill. So that's my first question, just about if we're doing exit interviews. I have a couple of things here, just different things. Okay, for me to go through them, and then feedback, and if not,
go ahead. They'll take note.
We'd said Aldrina was going to be here, so some of this maybe be under her area. But sort of briefly touched on the multidisciplinary teams and recruitment, and you said there, Gerard, that it's in the early stages at the minute. So in terms of where the community health hub is sitting here in Newry, will that have any impact on that? On the rollout of the MDT as well within primary care, if it's likely. And just two other things, I suppose, just in terms, like you for yourself, Chair, is any update on the plans for the ongoing development of social prescribing across our trust, and on the contracting of community voluntary sector dementia services. Just a couple of things that have been brought to my attention the last few hours, and I said it would bring them up tonight. So whatever you can give, that would be great. Thank you.
Could respond, and then we'll take the next speaker in after. Is that all right, Michael?
Yeah, no problem, Chair.
I can't answer the question about exit interviews, except to say that obviously the Trust takes very seriously the issues around recruitment and retention of staff, and this has come through the likes of the Daisy Hill Pathfinder. It's been a very significantly or a clearly identified issue. I would be very surprised if it weren't the case actually that detailed exit interviews weren't being carried out in those cases, but I am happy to put that question back. With respect to the current treatment centre that you're referring to, the Health Hub, obviously the Trust is very keen to progress with that because, as has already been noted, you know, in terms of the bringing together of a range of teams into a state-of-the-art facility is something that we believe as an organisation will serve the local population very well in the longer term. Regardless of if and when that happens, the forging forward, as Dawn has already indicated, of the multidisciplinary team approach is something that we are highly supportive of, very excited about. And to me, these two things are not mutually exclusive. And how we make use of the facilities in order to further facilitate the bringing together of teams is something that we will want to continue to explore. There were two more pieces. One around social prescribing, and obviously alongside our colleagues in South Eastern Trust, as well as here with the council and indeed across the community voluntary sector, we are in the process of working with a number of social prescribing or community navigator type initiatives and keen to support the development of those. If I may, from my own perspective, I work in the field of community development and health improvement. Whilst I feel that the opportunities that are kind of coming forward through social prescribing, in particular with reference to the leading role that the community and voluntary sector has to play in enabling those to develop, I think we are at risk if we don't try to understand the connections and the synergies across the range of different initiatives that are emerging, that we run the risk of causing confusion or of there being confusion within the sector and people or organisations unnecessarily competing for business without fully understanding that if we have a greater degree of interconnectedness, we can actually all collectively support our local populations to improve their health and well-being at an early intervention and prevention stage. So, for example, in the Southern area, Southern Trust area, I recently hosted a meeting of social prescribing providers, both within the statutory and the voluntary sector, in order to continue the conversation around how we improve our communication and our interconnectedness, because social prescribing is clearly a model of working linked in again to the development of multidisciplinary teams that can stand us well in the future with particular reference to improving health and social wellbeing outcomes for people locally. So we're very much engaged and we want to continue to engage with partners across all sectors to see that further develop. I don't have a response around dementia services in the community and voluntary sector for you, in that it's not something I'm directly engaged in, but again, I'm happy to take that question back. Okay.
Michael?
Yes, Chair, thank you, and thank you very much for your presentation this evening. There's one question relating to the responses we got, and maybe another issue that maybe even if people, as is suggested, could come back to us on. Just in relation to Carrigore, there was an indication, I think, at some stage that there were plans potentially to deal with the vulnerable children who had the complex needs at a potentially different location. That would free up Carrigore for the respite care. I know that the pressures that it's putting on families, some of them maybe deal with on a day-to-day basis, is quite substantial. And secondly, you know, from that perspective, is there any sort of potential timeline for resolution of this, or is this a potentially long-term decision that's been taken that will lead to no potential respite care for families who are very much in need of it, particularly those with children with very highly complex needs? So that's the issue in relation to that. A little bit of clarity just on top of the response that we've received. The second issue would come on the back of a sort of a need for some degree of interlocking between the Trust, Department of Health, Department of Communities, and maybe even the Appeals Service. We have an ongoing spiral of cases going through the Appeals Service for those people with disabilities, with medical conditions, who are having to make very difficult tracks to courthouses, etc., for appeals. And when they get there, following a decision taken by the Permanent Secretary back in April in relation to GDPR, they've been requested to go to their GP for all their medical records relating to whatever period the appeals service requires. And some of that cases could be going back 5, 10, 15 years. On top of that, the appeals service is requesting that once they get that from their GP, and in some cases if those are lost, some of them have told me that they face a charge of £50 to get access from their GPs because of the pressure that's been put on resources within the GP practices. On top of that, you're asking some very vulnerable people in society to be asked to go through their medical records and redact third-party information. Now, I would plea with those within the Trust, the Department of Health, the Appeals Service, and the Department of Communities to sit down and come up with a solution that meets the GDPR restrictions but does not put the burden on the patient or the appellant. Some of these people come to me suffering from acute depression and have to go through the trauma of going to these appeals, and then when they get there, have been told to go back, get their medical records, in some cases pay for them, and then read them through and redact them. Now, what I would look to from a health perspective, what pressure is that putting on the GP practices, and also what potential pressure is that putting on those already very vulnerable people in our society who've been forced to have to go through hoops to get 9 times out of 10 of the appeals that I'm doing to get at least some, if not all, of the money that they're entitled to and benefits. So, you know, I'm sorry that it encompasses 3 or 4 different departments, but I would ask that from the GP perspective that something is done and done urgently. Okay, thank you.
I mean, I would have to acknowledge everything that you're saying about the burden that has been put on individuals where there is an appeals process. Unfortunately, we as trusts are not involved with that. I do know it has put a further burden on GPs as well in terms of the information and evidence that is required for them. But GPs are independent practitioners and independent of trusts, so you know we can't you know comment on what with any great degree of knowledge of the impact that it's had on them. But we certainly do see an impact that it has on individuals who are also known to our service as well.
Chair, if I may come back on the question, the specific query around Carrigore. Again, that is a question I can take back to the Trust, your question around a specific timeline. Obviously, the response there said that the Trust is actively pursuing a resolution here. I can't, as we sit here, give you a timeline, but I can certainly bring that query back to the Trust.
Can you confirm that there was an attempt made earlier in the year to potentially relocate those people with highly specific specialised needs?
I can't confirm that.
Right. Okay. Can you come back to me on something? That's great. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Any other transfers there, questions or observations?
I have a question, but it's on a different issue. It's to do with the trust policy on powered wheelchairs and their maintenance. I have to declare an interest, first of all, because the young person I'm going to speak about is actually my son. He's a 28-year-old young man. He has muscular dystrophy. He's been in a wheelchair from his 10. Up until this past few years, we've actually had two powered wheelchairs, but as one got older, we eventually had to give it up. We now have one. We also have a manual wheelchair. Now, a manual wheelchair is of no use to someone with muscular dystrophy. Firstly, it hinders their independence. This is a young man who drives, who has a full-time job. The car is adapted for his powered wheelchair, so therefore there's no points for clamping or anything else to put a manual wheelchair in this car. We live, as anybody will know, in Uri. Most of the housing developments are built at the top of every hill. I live at one that's at the very top of a hill. He's by no means a small fella, so you're never going to push him, neither up nor down. We've been told recently that policy now states that companies who maintain these wheelchairs are no longer allowed to store parts. So therefore, if his wheelchair breaks down, if you don't know what it is, luckily enough, when it breaks down, we sort of know what is gone. We ring up, we say the part is gone. If you don't know what the part is, it can take them 2 or 3 days to come to have a look at it. When they look at it, they'll tell you, we don't have parts for this chair. We have to order it. It can take 2 weeks. Well, I don't know if any job that will let anybody take 2 weeks off work because they can't get there. So naturally, he's going to lose 2 weeks' wages. So we need to look at some way of, like, this is a young fellow who leads a very active life for somebody that's in a wheelchair, and to be told that he can't go to work, he can't drive his car, things that we all take for granted day and daily, that he has to sit maybe for 2 weeks before we get a part. So we need, for people that use wheelchairs like this, there needs to be some sort of something set aside that will allow parts to be kept, especially for wheelchairs that break down on a regular basis. Now, this wheelchair could break down once a month, and sometimes to be told, it's got that good, we now, they just leave us the wheels because we've now worked out how to change the wheels ourselves. Mm. So they'll order us a set of wheels, and if it breaks, we'll change. But if motors are that low, you can be told it can be anything up 14 to 21 days for them to get you a motor. So this policy could be looked at in some way.
I mean, that's a horrendous impact on your son's lifestyle, and I suspect other people as a result of change of policy. I don't know if Gerard is aware. I'm not aware of whether this is a local or a regional change to policy, but we can both take it away and try and get some more information and come back to you through council.
Very much, Father. Any other questions or observations from the Southern Trust? No? Thank you very much. We'll go on to item number 5, which is correspondence from NIES, Clinical Response Model.
Just before you finish with the health business, I think it would be remiss of me not to make reference to your own policy, your community plan, and then that you have the specific reference to collaboration or community support partnership. I just want to assure Council that both from the Southern Trust and the South Eastern Trust perspective, we are now part of that partnership, working with the Police, Council, Ambulance Service, and that's to target a very small number of vulnerable people who really don't fall into any particular programme of care and health. to come together as public agencies to share information and to plan how best we can intervene appropriately in the lives of those individuals. And they tend to be people who either come to the attention of ambulance quite a bit, or the police, or perhaps council, or the housing executive, or ourselves, but where there's no joined up thinking. So that is now in operation across the council area. I guess the other thing that I would just because mental health is my word, I would like to make reference to the South Eastern Trust's development of a multi-agency triage team, which again involves the ambulance service and the police service. And that is a 999 service. It's based, so we have mental health staff based with the police and with the ambulance. So when a call comes in, a 999 or 911 call comes in, and the police deem that there's a mental health component, our staff will go out with ambulance and police so that vulnerable individual can receive on-the-spot support and advice and direction into appropriate service. It's only available on Saturdays and Sundays. The pilot commenced in Bangor and in Lisburn, but due to the demand for the service, we are also extending into the Down District. I just wanted Council to be aware of that, because it's very much consistent with what's in your Living Well Together document.
I'm really delighted to hear that, because from my experience working on council since 2001, the biggest prohibitor to good partnership working was the reluctance to share information. So you're telling me that people are prepared to share information that is required to do the job properly, but I'm glad to hear that.
And we have found it amazingly helpful, as have the police, as have the ambulance. And again, you know, that would be the intention through the concern hubs the council have established. While we still are trying to sort out the detail of data sharing agreements, there is no doubt that the work that we've already done is helping individuals.
Sure. Right, on item number 5 is the response from the NIES. There are no representatives here. Do we have any questions on the response from councillors? Any observations? Yeah. As you said, if there is anything, we can take note of it, and the NIES will come back to us at some stage. That's it.
Just one thing, just on that. Sure. If you are taking note of that, just that there was, and there's no of, I'm looking at our categories here of the responses, but I know certainly in the area, I think I brought it up before, somewhere around, I can't remember where, but the fact was that when GPs called on an emergency and identified something as an emergency, the ambulance still didn't turn up for over an hour and a half. Which is very worrying, and not least for the medical people involved. So, you know, and we had a presentation from the NAAS here, I think it was last year, and they talked about how they were upping and upgrading their whole criteria and how they, you know, they graded the different calls. So I really question about this new, their new operation, and if they don't believe medical doctor, then who would they believe?
Okay. Catherine?
Chair, I would just like to point out that on the first page there it says the 12th of November 2018. I can only assume that it means the 12th of November 2019 that those new implementations are going to come into force.
I see, you could be right there. Catherine, yep. It's a typo. All right, that's about it. That's it. Councillors, thanks very much for that. Thank you very much for your team and your presentation. Thank you.
And MPs vote to reject the 12th of December election plan.